Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under roll call be dispensed with, the sergeant-at-arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Pastor Gary Dreyer from Christ Lutheran Church on Capitol Hill in St. Paul.
High end of the thing. Thank you so much. It's good to be with you again. As I said last time I was here, we're right across the street. And anytime you'd like to come over and use our worship area or our peace garden, it's a lobby-free zone. So come on over when you want to get away. Let's pray together. First of all, I invite all of you just to lift up whatever concerns personally you have, any hopes, any fears. And now, dear God, we set those aside to do the good work that you have called us to do. We are of different mind, and we represent constituents that are of different mind. And we pray that today you unite us behind the desire to do what's best for Minnesota, that unite us for the common good. Thank you for the day, dear God. Amen.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Yeah.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Kielash, Corey, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olsen G, Olsen M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogamiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheids, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, yeah, Tomasoni, yeah, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Weger.
Yeah, that's all right. Call it that. Quorum is present. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned, Senate file number 643, a bill for an act relating to unemployment compensation, providing eligibility for benefits under certain training programs, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. The next message is on Senate File 978, Senator Erickson Ropes. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 978, a bill for an act relating to human services, changing the requirements for shaken baby syndrome training and licensed child care and child foster care programs. Senate File 978 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur with the amendments of the House on Senate File 978 and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator Erickson Ropes, a brief description of the bill and what changes occurred.
Mr. President. It was just a couple words dealing with identifying the language of children who are going to be affected by this bill. We were talking about children in the age group of birth to five, and we talked about whether to use school age or under five, and the language that the House came up with fits the needs of the Senate, so we concur.
Okay, I'm told that we're going to wait because there's not enough people here to vote. We'll withdraw it. Okay, we're moving on. Messages from the House. No. It's all right. Does she have to withdraw it, or we just... withdraw it. We'll report the message later on.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Messages from the House. Continuing on messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House file numbers 908, 1242, and 1301, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
This is first reading of House bills. They're printed on today's agenda. Senator Pogemiller, did you wish to
Mr. President, there's been an, I think your staff has been made aware of this. There's been a, the House made a modest error. They should have sent over House file 908 on a Senate file because the Senate file is over there. And so I'm going to move to lay House file 908 on the table, and I think the House is going to do whatever they need to do to rectify that in the next couple days.
Okay. On the motion to lay Senate file 908 on the table. House file 908 on the table. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There are a couple of House files without objection. First reading of House file 1242 and House file 1301. The next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are a number or a few printed on today's agenda without objection. First reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a couple of author's motions without objection. We'll take them as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Couple of resolutions on today's agenda without objection. The two resolutions will be sent to the Rules Committee. Senator Pogemiller.
Ms. Chairman, members, as we discussed yesterday, the intent now is to recess for about an hour. And when we come back, the plan is to designate two bills, Senate file 1627, the Judiciary Bill, and Senate File 2081, the Economic Development and Housing Omnibus Bill. They're the last two bills on the general orders, and I think we'll designate both of those today for consideration, and that presumably is the purpose of the caucuses.
Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to announce that Republicans will be caucusing in room 112.
Senator Pogemiller.
The majority will be in room 107. Hopefully we can keep it to about an hour.
Okay.
So I'd move a recess to the call of the chair.
On the motion to recess to the call of the chair, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.
Roll call be dispensed with. The Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, I'd like to designate two bills as special orders today. Senate File 1627, pursuant to Rule 26, I'd like to designate. That's a Judiciary Omnibus Bill, and I'd like to designate Senate File 2081. That's the Economic Development Bill. I think we'll do Senator Foley's bill first. And, Mr. President, I would like to move that for the consideration of those two bills, that we be, have a call on for those two bills.
Okay.
I switched.
Senate's under call.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I'd like to yield to Senator Foley.
Senator Foley, and that call is on the balance of the two bills. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I have the Senate File 1627 Omnibus Judiciary Funding Bill, and I would like to offer the A-17 amendment.
Senate Bill. Secretary will report the A-17 Foley amendment.
Senator Foley moves to amend Senate File 1627 as follows, page 7 after line 1. Page 7, line 1. This is amendment A-17.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is just a bill to make the offer's wishes, and it's purely technical, and I would
on
ask
the,
for your approval.
On the Foley amendment. All those A-17, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank all of the staff and other folks in my division. I'm especially grateful for Senator Mao and the Judiciary Committee with their thoughtful insight and hard work and on behalf of this legislation. What you have before you is a judiciary omnibus bill, which sets forth the courts, Board of Public Defense, Civil and Legal Services, the Board of Judicial Standards, Tax Court, and the Uniform Laws Commission. And these areas represent approximately 2% of the general fund budget. The Judiciary Budget Division was given a target of $53 million in cuts, which represents approximately 7% of my budget. Our division also received $5.6 million in one-time federal funds to offset some of those cuts. Article 1 sets forth the appropriations for the bill in the terms of basic funding and reduction to base funding are as follows. The Supreme Court, $4.5 million. Civil Legal Services, $500,000. Court of Appeals, $1.4 million. The District Courts with federal funds is approximately $32.6 million. The Tax Court is $50,000. Uniform Law Commission, $4,000. And the Board of Judicial Standards, $28,000. And the Board of Public Defense, $4 million. Article 2, Section 1 through 5 lists specific fees that may be increased in a set amount if the Judicial Council so desires. Any increase will go directly to the dedicated account available only for court funding. This is an important issue because very much of what we've used, it's never gotten back to the courts, but it was placed in the general fund. Section 7 established a dedicated special revenue account for the courts. Section 8 authorizes the Supreme Court, if they choose, to assess a public defender fee on each licensed attorney in the state. This fee applies only to attorneys actively engaged in the practice of law. Section 3, or Article 3, Section 1 says that a person successfully completing a diversion program in violation of Chapter 169 must pay the state surcharge. Section 2 deals with the appointing of a special master. Language in a bill was authorized by Senator Mary Olson, and we'll give her an opportunity to be heard shortly. Section 3 gives Hennepin County District Court flexibility as to the number and location of misdemeanor violation bureaus. This was placed on there at the request of Hennepin County. Section 4 raises the limit for the amount of money that can take into conciliation court, which was Senator Ortman's bill. Section 5 revises the law so that referees can serve as judges of conciliation court in all judicial districts rather than just the 2 and 4 districts, which are Hennepin and Ramsey. Section 6 is a restorative justice provision that had lengthy discussion in the Judiciary Committee and is the work of Senator Mary Olson and Senator Kubley. Section 7 clarifies in statute prohibition of issuing administrative fines. Section 8 is language from Senator Olson, which authorizes the court to disperse minimum amounts of fine receipts to the juvenile court, drug intervention court, as well as the drug prevention programs. Article 4 features provisions proposed by the Minnesota Judicial Branch, which is seeking to accomplish 3 things. 1, automate the system by handling approximately 1.2 million citations and parking tickets processed by the court. 2, provide better enforcement of judicial standards. Then 3, improve the court collection system, which will result in an increased revenue for the state and local government. These changes will be brought in and will bring in an estimated $3.8 million for the courts and $10 million in new revenue for municipalities. Article 4 includes a wide variety of different changes. Some are housekeeping items from the days of the county funding, and others are a result of help to proceed the various fines more efficiently. And others give authorization to court to make changes necessary to collect delinquent revenue. Since there are 61 pages in this article, I'll touch briefly on those. 6 through 12 seek to simplify and clarify the current confusing and convoluted set statutory scheme for distributing fines. And in order to automate the division distribution slips, we need a rather unique statutory citation for each level of crime in statute. For example, if you were to get a DWI on a boat, the fine is different from then when you applied one on an ATV, snowmobile, or just a general motor vehicle. These changes will save countless hours for court personnel, along with state and help streamline a new auto assessment effort. Section 24 established the authority in a court to refer unpaid fines to a collection process and prohibits the judicial counsel from setting the collection period for court-ordered fines, surcharges, court cost resolution, and fees imposed. Section 32 through 34 or 3 relocates the judicial counsel authority to establish uniform fines and schedules, permits courts to treat misdemeanors on a list as petty misdemeanors. As a result, the court will be able to close many of the more cases that are sent to them for collection. This, in turn, will result in an increased revenue from fines, primarily from local governments. In closing, it gives me great displeasure to submit these reductions, but I believe that we have done the best we could in recognizing where we're going with it. Mr. President, I would respond to questions.
Discussion on Senate File 1627. Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair, I move the A-19 amendment.
Secretary will report the Pretner Solon A-19 amendment.
Senator Pretner Solon moves to amend Senate File 1627 as follows. Page 16, delete line, Section 7. This is Amendment A-19.
Senator Pretner Solon on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm offering this amendment on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Minnesota Sheriffs Association. This amendment removes the provision in Senate File 1627 that prohibits local units of government from using administrative fines for traffic enforcement. Cities and counties that have implemented administrative fine ordinances for traffic have found this to be a useful enforcement tool. And I understand that the law is not clear on whether local units of government have authority to implement these ordinances. However, I think this language goes in the wrong direction and it should be removed at this time. I'm also told that there is no revenue impact related to this provision, so taking it out would not put the bill out of balance. The use of these administrative citations for low-level traffic offenses have been an effective public safety tool. Local law enforcement officers have used administrative citations for minor violations that might otherwise be warnings. Administrative citations have been shown to positively change driving behavior. And representatives of the courts have repeatedly stated that district courts are overburdened and that they are facing unprecedented funding challenges. Given these conditions, it makes sense to keep low-level violations out of the district court system. I would encourage support for this A-19 amendment.
Senator Foley on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I urge my compatriots that they vote no on this. What we have is a situation where two attorney generals and two state auditors say that cities do not have the authority to issue administrative fines for moving violations. And while this practice has been tolerated, has cost our state millions of dollars, we have situations that have a real secure amount of traffic tickets that have been reduced. What we're looking at here is money, and I want you to know that we need to vote against this. Thank you very much.
Discussion on the A-17 amendments. Senator Corey.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Pretner Solon, I want to thank you for offering this amendment. This has been a long, ongoing battle, and I will just say I want to speak on behalf of the Sheriff of Morrison County, Mikkel Wetzel, who has been down here numerous times to testify, and he's told me that when his deputies pull somebody over who's probably just coming or going to work, they do not feel comfortable giving somebody a ticket that's going to be $120 or $150. That's a lot of money. Might not be to the people that live around here, but it is to us up in northern Minnesota. And when Mikkel Wetzel, when the sheriff can, they can give a $30 or $40 fine, and it slows people down. I just think that makes sense. These tickets, with all these fees that we continue to add on, you're going to find that law enforcement is just going to be, they're not going to be writing tickets because they don't want to give somebody a ticket that's going to probably, with all the fees and taxes that we're proposing here in this place, pretty soon a speeding ticket is going to be $400. And then you're going to find that law enforcement isn't even going to write a ticket. They'll probably give them a warning. So I think this is a good amendment. I'm hoping that we can get bipartisan support on it. It just makes a whole lot of sense. Thanks.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Prettner-Solin yield? Senator, I was wondering, the issue is if people get a ticket, and in the bill or in the language, I think it says something about that they would typically declare their guilt by paying their fine and everything would be settled. But what if they don't want to declare their guilt and they want to challenge this somewhere? What does the administrative process give them for going to challenge their ticket? I've heard a variety of things. There seems to be not a lot of consistency about how this is done. And I'm wondering if what your proposal is or what you think cities and or counties would do to have an appropriate process for challenging those tickets.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Senator Roebling, I'm not sure that I have the answer for you, but every district has traffic courts. I'm assuming that these could be taken up in those traffic courts just as the other fines with the $78 surcharges could be taken up.
Mr. President.
Senator Corrine.
Mr. President, I can tell you, Senator Roebling, what happens in Morrison County. The sheriff or his deputies, they actually give the person the option if they want to contest it or they want to go to court. They get the more expensive ticket. If they understand that they have been speeding or had a moving violation, and they give them the option to have the lower ticket. And so that's, I can't speak what goes on in other places, but that's what happens in Morrison County. So if they want to contest it, then they get the more expensive ticket and they go to court.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I will also thank Senator Solon for bringing this amendment forward. And I think Senator Coring answered the question properly. When they plead not guilty in communities where they have these, they actually then end up going into the court system, where basically Senator Foley then would, where he actually wants it to go. So it just triggers the courts if you plead not guilty on the charge. But I arise in support of this, obviously, this amendment. 250 to plus communities and counties in the state of Minnesota have been using this form of local control, if you will, for quite a few years, and that's one of the reasons that I have supported this in the past. I didn't do it in my own department when I was there. However, there were cities real close to me and counties real close to me that were using it. And they were just complimenting as to how it really helped reduce the offenses that they were dealing with. Low level administrative citations for low level traffic offenses had been effective public safety tool in their communities. So it definitely works. And the real positive thing that we're talking about here today is that, you know, nothing's been broken. The physical impact is neutral. This is a neutral situation. We tried to get things out of physical, and they just can't put any dollars to it, whether the state would actually receive any money or not. And if they did, the cost of actually running the courts would basically gobble up the amount of revenue that's coming in anyhow. So it's revenue neutral. So folks, the League of Minnesota Cities, AMC, sheriffs, and chiefs want to keep this particular thing in order, and I think it's a very good amendment here, and I would ask for your support as well.
Mr. President.
Senator Cohn.
Well, Mr. President, members, I hope you'll oppose Senator Prentner Solon's amendment. I would just ask members to look at the history of what we've been doing over the last number of years. We've tried to set up a court system that's an integrated court system. We've gotten away from the system that was there over the decades, a system that included such things as justices of the peace, municipal courts. And the reason we've done so is we've attempted to set up an integrated court system that would be able to keep a handle on what's taking place within the court system. What Senator Foley has in his bill is simply a continuation of what has been longstanding policy on the part of this legislature going back, I would suggest, 35 years. The last piece of which, and I was the person who originated this back in 1989, was the state takeover of the trial court system to provide some equality throughout the state, to not just have, say, a couple of judicial districts, the richer judicial districts have more services, but to have an equality of service throughout the state. That's what Senator Foley is doing with the language in this bill, is to continue that direction. And members, I would suggest if we want to support this amendment, then I think we should be consistent, logical, and reestablish a justice of the peace system, because that's what this is a remnant of. And I would suggest, members, that if we want to continue with the policy that's been longstanding, going back for at least 20 years, actually longer, I said 35 years, to when we got rid of justices of the peace and municipal courts, then we ought to defeat this amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And to that point, I know it's hard to believe, but I'm old enough to remember the justice of the peace system. Actually, everybody thinks I'm younger than that, but actually I remember those days when we would actually write a ticket to somebody, and we had actually hold court in the kitchen of the justice of the peace's kitchen, on the kitchen table. And quite frankly, folks, that was a great way of handling cases, and it didn't log down and bog down the court system, and that's exactly what this does. It actually goes back to a little more local control. And I think we can put our trust in our local officials out there that are saying that it's working. That's good enough for me. Thanks.
Further discussion, Senator Prentner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would remind everybody that this is a fiscally neutral amendment, and that we are continually hearing about the courts being overburdened, and this is one way to take some of that burden off the courts. I would also remind you that this is something that is recommended by the Police Association, the counties, the cities, and the Sheriff's Association. So this is a good local government bill. And, Mr. President, I would request a roll call vote.
Okay. There'll be a roll call. Senator Roebling and Senator Limmer.
I rise to speak in opposition to Senator Prentner Solon's amendment. She said it's fiscally neutral, but I don't know that it really is, because I think it could potentially be a revenue generator for local communities. You know, if the local communities get to keep the administrative fine and we really don't have any say as to what those fines will be, we could see quite an array of fines across the state. If you get stopped for speeding in Lakeville, you might pay a $50 fine. If you get stopped for speeding in Rochester, you could pay a $100 fine for the same limit over the speed limit. It could be all over the board. The other thing is that with proposed cuts in local government aid, and I can imagine that some cities might want to step it up a little bit to make sure that the money, which typically comes back, I think, to the law enforcement division, might be a little greater. I'm not saying for sure this would happen, but it has the potential to happen. You have an officer out on the streets who writes 10 tickets with administrative penalties a day, but you multiply that by 3 because there's 3 shifts of them. Suddenly you have 210 tickets in a week with around-the-clock coverage. Multiply that by $50 or $100 each that might come back to the local unit of government, and you suddenly have some real money you're talking about. And so I don't know that, because we haven't really regulated this well, I don't think it's it could be a free-for-all out there. I don't know if it's what we really want to do or where we really want to go. And I think not having it in law, as Senator Foley is proposing is in his bill, is a better and more consistent way of doing it for our people in Minnesota.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise to speak against the Prettner-Solon Amendment. I think much of this discussion is going down a path that I'd like to put a little different perspective on. The law enforcement community is split on this issue. It does not speak in one voice regarding administrative fines. One of the reasons why we went to this direction of opposing administrative fines is in the past, which Senator Cohen brought up, and Senator Roebling also began to speak about, is that quite often these administrative fines simply become a cash cow for a local community. The days of speed traps and cash cows that way have got to end. I think we did it the right way in the past, and I hope we don't return to that process again. It's much better to have this slightly more regulated. It does not impede law enforcement. In law enforcement, Senator Coring, you made mention that law enforcement wouldn't enforce the law. They take an oath to protect us and to uphold the law. If they're not enforcing the law, they're violating their own oath of office. They're not the ones who make policy. We are. I hope we don't go down this return to that practice as in the past, which would encourage this type of cash cow revenue funding enhancement.
Did you wish to respond?
I would very much like to, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would point out, Senator Limmer, when I go back home, I had somebody say, oh, Senator Coring, you've got so much power. I don't really have any power. I've got to try to come here and convince half or better the people in here that I have a good idea. Then I got to try to convince the House that I have a good idea. Then I got to try to convince the governor that I have a good idea. Actually, law enforcement has all the power, because somebody can pull you over. They can do one of three things, Senator Limmer. They can give you a ticket, they can give you a warning, or they can give you a verbal warning. It's all up to them. And so really, that's a lot of power if you ask me. And I would also point out, and I'm not putting this towards you, Senator Limmer, or any member in specific, because I don't want to get in trouble for impugning any member specifically, but I would point out to my Republican brethren and sisterin that we are the party of local control. And so now what you're saying is you're not putting any trust in cities and counties, whether or not they're smart enough to implement these administrative fines. And I know that there was somebody that passed out something yesterday that said that Republicans are supposed to be against gambling because it's in the Republican Party platform. Well, I would remind you that we're for local control. So if you're a true Republican, then you should be for this amendment. So I'm hoping that you will be.
I think a Democrat introduced the amendment. Yeah. All right. Just to make that clear. Okay, I think we're ready to vote on the Prettner-Solon A-17 amendment. Secretary will take the roll on the amendment. Senate's under call. Should be voting. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes, 18 nays, the amendment is adopted. Any further discussion on Senate File 1627? Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1627, a bill for an act relating to the judiciary, appropriating money for the courts, public defenders, and other judiciary-related agencies, etc.
Secretary will take the roll on final passage. Not too bad. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 40 ayes and 25 nays, the bill is passed. Its title agreed to. The next bill designated is Senate File 2081, Senator Tomassoni. Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senate File 2081 is the Economic Development and Housing Omnibus Bill. Members, this bill meets its budget target reduction of $22 million. The agency's administrative budgets were generally reduced. However, there's substantial support in the bill for economic and job growth purposes. Examples are items of small business assistance, small business innovation research, small business development center, small business growth for Minnesota enterprises. There's also the Biobusiness Alliance support. There's employment for disabled people, Office of Science and Technology, and for jobs productions. We also have some federal stimulus money that has come into the Workforce Development Fund. There's about $20 million of money that will be used for helping all the projects that are supported by and all the programs that are supported by the Workforce Development Fund. There's also a couple of dedicated funds, such as coming from the federal government, such as the National Emergency Grant for workers in the auto industry, such as the Denny Hecker situation, and there's also the Trade Adjustment Act, which should help employees whose jobs have been outsourced, like Hutchinson Technology. The spreadsheet, members, gives you a real good indication of what's in Article 1 of the bill. I could go through it line by line, but I think it's pretty easy to take a look at the spreadsheet and see what the totals are. There are 20 different instances in the bill where the Senate's position is the same as the governor's, and so it's a good bill. We have used some of the Workforce Development Fund to add to some of the projects that are in the bill so that we can get some things funded that might not otherwise have been funded. There's some articles 2 through 5 are the Bonhoff article. It's a deed technical bill, and it's generally technical language and cleanup language. Article 6 is an IRRRB provision, which has several jobs provisions in it and is about shovel-ready jobs and putting people to work and helping out our communities. There's no general fund money in that particular bill. It's all agency money. Article 7 is a debt settlement registration bill from Senator Pappas. Article 8 designates hockey as a state sport. Article, that's Section 1. Then Section 5 is Senator Saltzman's Office of Technology bill. Section 6 is Senator Senjum's deed reporting bill. Section 14 is Senator Pogemiller's University of Minnesota neighborhood plan. Section 17 is Senator Torres-Ray's transportation impacts on business bill. Section 19 is a battery surcharge that was added by Senator Pariseau in division. Section 35 is Senator Bach's contractor's bill. Section 47 is about the manufactured homes and collecting the $12 fee. And Section 49 is Senator Cohen's River Center loan forgiveness bill. The bill has several different programs in it that are funded all through the bill. Senator Koch has a snowbait bill. Senator Spark has a business alliance. Senator Dibble has MITA. Senator Pariseau, Women Venture, and it goes all through the bill. So, members, if you don't have something in here, you probably didn't have it in front of my committee. Thank you very much. I appreciate your support.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A22 amendment.
Secretary will report the Vandeveer A22 amendment.
Senator Vandeveer moves to amend Senate File 2081 as follows. Page 145, delete Section 35. This is Amendment A22.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, what this amendment does is deletes the provision in this bill that requires the registration of unlicensed persons. These unlicensed persons are independent contractors or in the contracting business, as they're described in here, contractor or subcontractors. And I don't know what's happened here, but it looks like we're registering them for the purpose of, or with the basic assumption that they're not paying taxes or that they're guilty of something, and on the possibility that some might not be, as is true of the entire population of the state, we are going to actually register them. And I think what happened is we found out some people are still working in the state, and we're going to attempt to stop them or at least round them up and register them so we know, you know, when they're working, and at least we can find out why they're still working. We've got most people out of a job, and we looks like we want to finish it. And I don't think that, you know, regular citizens of the state of Minnesota who are getting up and going to work and doing their job and actually doing something, producing, maybe fixing houses the way this describes it. If you go around and fix anything, it looks like you need to register. And I'm not sure why we need to do that. Maybe there's an explanation that's good, but it would have to be really good because these are people who are not required to be licensed. And I think we should maybe just leave somebody alone. But no, we have to go after every single person who might be doing something to make a living and see if we can make it just a little bit harder on them. The recession's not quite done them in yet, so maybe this will do it. And I ask for a roll call, Mr. President.
Be a roll call. This is the 822 Vandeveer Amendment. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, for a number of years now, we've been trying to get our arms around the misclassification of employees as independent contractors. And it is a growing problem in the construction industry as more and more employers tell their employees, well, you're going to have to be an independent contractor if you're going to work for me. And it's really putting legitimate contractors that pay payroll overhead at a huge disadvantage when it comes to competitively bidding projects. Last year, we passed some independent contractor language requiring them to get a license from Department of Labor and Industry, hoping that we could start to get our arms around that problem. What ended up happening was rather than people go over to the Department of Labor and Industry and become registered as an independent contractor, they went over to the Secretary of State's office and filed as a limited liability corporation. So the provisions for the independent contractor really didn't work as we had intended them to. So this proposal this year doesn't require all the hoops to go through of getting registered as an independent contractor. It's much easier for people. I do believe we have an agreement between the trades and the Builders Association on this registration idea, and I'd appreciate if you voted no on the Vandeveer Amendment.
Further discussion on the Vandeveer motion to amend, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And would Senator Bach yield, please?
He will yield, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, would you, I have constituents that have been contacting me about this, and can you maybe clarify it for me? Is this going to, or the current law maybe, is the current law going to do a better job, or was it set up to do a better job of enforcing the licensure throughout the state? One of the complaints I'm getting is there's an awful lot of hodgepodge construction outfits out there that are running around, and the ones that are licensed don't mind paying the fee. However, there's no enforcement going on. Does that pertain to this at all?
Senator Bach.
Well, the problem, Mr. President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, is when we passed the independent contractor language, we were counting on the fees that are brought in, which I believe was $150 for every individual who registered as an independent contractor. We were counting on those fees to provide the money for enforcement of the law. And when people did not register as an independent contractor, the department then didn't get the fees, so they couldn't do the enforcement. So there is a serious problem with the current law. We have a registration process, and we're depending on the fees to do the enforcement. People aren't registering, so this is a different way to try and get the fee money that's needed to do the enforcement for the very reason that you cite.
Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Bach yield for a question.
He will yield. Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Bach, if there is a problem with the bill talks about registration of unlicensed persons. These would be people who don't require a license, would it not?
The issue is, Mr. President, Senator Vandeveer, for people that did not register, they went the other route to form an LLC to be able to get around the independent contractor requirements. This would require them not to get licensed as an independent contractor, but it would require them to register with the Department of Labor and Industry. They wouldn't have to go through the licensing process, but for people that didn't go through the licensing process and went over to the Secretary of State's office and went through the LLC process, this would require them to circle back and register with the Department of Labor and Industry. They wouldn't have to go through the licensing requirements, but just register.
Would Senator Bach yield for another question?
He will yield. Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Bach, this isn't about licensing, though, is it? Isn't it about taxes and workers' compensation?
The Mr. President, the provision is not about licensing. It's about registering over at the Department of Labor and Industry as an independent contractor, which is what they are. But they've been able to get around the licensing provision by registering as an LLC. So it is an effort to try and get our arms around the misclassification of people as independent contractors as a way to avoid payroll overhead and gain a competitive advantage over other contractors who are paying things like workers' comp and unemployment comp and FICA to their employees. The employers who are using independent contractors are able to avoid all that payroll overhead and have a competitive disadvantage.
Well, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this is not about licensing or enforcing that. This is about taxes, people that may be holding themselves out as independent contractors when they're actually employees, all of which can be, the companies and the individuals can be audited to determine whether they're obeying the tax laws or the workers' compensation laws. What this does is assumes that the group is doing something wrong, period. And so they need to come in and register so that we know who they are, supposedly, so that we can do what? I mean, what is the purpose of it if they're engaged in lawful activity? They're not required to be licensed. They're simply working. Most of them, I'm sure some of them, aren't reporting their taxes and aren't doing it correctly. But that's true in every single industry, and that is why people get audited, I believe. But what this does is assume that this group is doing something wrong and is guilty until proven innocent, and they need to come in and register, even though they're not required to get a license. So, members, there's more to this than enforcing licensing. That's not what it's about. It's about the government chasing people around, most of them law-abiding, just doing their jobs, and making it just a little bit harder to continue in that endeavor.
Secretary will take the roll on the Vanderveer motion. Motion to amend. John Dahl. All senators have been voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 20 ayes and 45 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A9 amendment.
Secretary will report the Rosen A9 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate File 2081 as follows. Page 159, after line 24, insert Article 9. This is Amendment A-9.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. As you all know, members, the Minnesota restaurant industry is really facing some serious challenges. The industry itself has about 9,000 restaurants and employs over 260,000 people. And so far, they have lost about 9,000 jobs just last year. So, Mr. President and members, this is the super wage amendment. And it's very simple. It would have a sunset of 2 years. I think that's important to remember. And the bill would basically say that if there's a $12 threshold, so if the servers reported tips and minimum wage of $6.55 reach the threshold of $12 or per hour or more, they continue to make the base pay of $6.55 per hour. If their reported tips and base do not equal at least $12 per hour, they are paid the higher base wage of $7.25. And I think this is very important, Mr. President and members, and I think that we ought to do this for this industry that is facing some real issues. They have come to us repeatedly about this. You are going to see some restaurants close. It's not fair. I mean, they have some real documented wage earnings from these people that are the servers, and it's substantial. So I think this is something we can do, and like I said, there is a sunset of 2 years on this. I would like a roll call, Mr. President. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator Tapassoni.
Mr. President, I'd like to question the germaneness of this, Mr. President.
The question is whether the amendment is germane to the legislation.
Mr. President.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. President, I guess I would argue that this bill was heard in your committee, Mr. President, the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee. This is about jobs, and we are just trying to do something that is fair, especially now that the federal minimum wage is coming down the pipeline. It's going to be extremely onerous on these restaurants. And if there was an issue about prevailing wage or any other wage issue, it would be in Senator Tomasoni's bill. And unfortunately, we haven't had anything to deal with wages. But I think that your domainness on this is quite simple. Otherwise, it would not have gone through your committee.
Mr. President.
Senator Tapassoni.
Mr. President, none of these statutory references in this amendment are in my bill, and I think that alone makes this not germane.
Yeah, there's the section of law that you talk about, 177, is not mentioned at all in the bill. And also, there's nothing that I can see in the bill that deals with wages and minimum wages. And this is a state department's bill, so I would rule that it's not germane. Any further amendments?
Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, I'd like to appeal the rule of the President. Ask for a roll call vote.
There will be a roll call vote. Okay, the green vote will be a polling the ruling of the chair. Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 42 ayes, 22 nays, the ruling of the chair has been upheld, sustained. Further discussion on the bill. Secretary Wills, Senator Roebling.
Mr. President, I have the A21 amendment.
Secretary will report the Roebling A21 amendment. Is there another name on it, Senator Roebling?
Koch.
Senator Koch's name? Okay.
Senator Roebling moves to amend Senate File 2081 as follows. Page 155, delete Section 49, page 159. This is Amendment A21.
Senator Roebling on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday in Finance Committee, it was called to my attention that this bill forgives a $32.75 million loan to the City of St. Paul for the River Center / Excel Center. And members, what this amendment does is it takes out that loan forgiveness provision. This arrangement, this deal, this kind of contract with the state was made a long time ago. I think it was probably about 1998 when that funding was approved for the Excel Center. And the arrangement was that St. Paul was going to repay that loan. And they have paid about $15 million on it, but there is still $32 million outstanding debt. And I think that St. Paul should follow through on its commitment to repay that debt for that facility. Certainly that facility has benefited their community tremendously. It's attracted all kinds of major attractions. It still has the Wild Plain there. Just this summer it hosted the Republican National Convention. They have had a lot of use. It's been a good facility, I don't deny that. But St. Paul has benefited a lot from that, and I think that they should follow through on their obligation to repay that debt, and that's what this amendment does.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, I would move to amend Senator Roebling's amendment to, and I don't have the amendment right in front of me in terms of line items, but I would move to amend to delete from her amendment the section deleting Section 49 and keep Sections 51 and 53 in her amendment. And I would move that amendment orally, Mr. President.
I think you could do that. Why don't you tell the body what the 49 takes out and what's left?
Well, but Mr. President,
that, excuse me, Senator Cohen, before that, we'll report your amendment to the amendment.
Senator Cohen moves to amend the Roebling Amendment to Senate File 2081 as follows. Delete line 1.2, which is page 155, delete section 49.
Okay, Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, move that amendment to the amendment. Mr. President, we've had this debate a couple of other times on the Senate floor, and St. Paul has requested a couple of different things here, and I think my amendment would eliminate the provision that authorizes additional bonding authority. Arguably a difficult year to be doing that, and so I've talked to members, and I think that would be appropriate to do. However, relative to Section 49, I would ask, I would ask members to support my amendment, and I would ask that that be passed. And then I'd be happy to address Senator Roebling's amendment. But I do think, given where we are this year during the session, obviously Senator Langseth has passed his bonding bill, which authorizes some immediate job creation in terms of stimulus to the state economy. But I think in his bonding bill, we had not gotten involved with a significant number of local economic development projects other than what had been vetoed last year by the governor. So I think given that circumstance, I would ask that members support my amendment to delete sections 51 and 53.
We're on the amendment to the amendment, Senator Roebling.
I'm still trying to understand it, Mr. President. So you want to delete sections 51 and 53, which actually gives the bond authority to the city of St. Paul to move ahead with their pond project. But you want to keep the loan forgiveness. See, I would do it the other way around, because I'm not a St. Paul taxpayer, but I mean if St. Paul, you know, has a good case for their pursuing their bond authority, I'm not highly objectionable to that. But I'm just saying that I don't think the state taxpayers should finish paying off the loan for the Excel Center that the state provided to St. Paul back in 1998. So I guess I would oppose your amendment to my amendment. Did I explain it right? Is that what you're doing?
Well,
Your Honor, I thought this was fairly simple. So I'd ask for a roll call on my amendment to the amendment, which deletes sections 51 and 53. That's the request from the St. Paul senators. And Senator Roebling, if you think that's advisable when we deal with your amendment, you can offer that amendment back then.
Mr. President.
I think you want to...
Mr. President, I'll support the amendment to my amendment, but I still want... But I want to have a vote on Section 49. So what procedure would I then have to follow to do that? Can we divide the amendment?
Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Senator Cohn.
This is maybe a little bit confusing. Let me withdraw my amendment to the amendment. We'll go ahead with Senator Roebling's amendment, and I'll speak to the substance of that.
Okay, we're on withdraws his amendment to the amendment. We're on the Roebling amendment. Senator Cohn.
Well, Mr. President, let me address Senator Roebling's amendment relative to the loan forgiveness. We've talked about this issue quite a bit. St. Paul in 1998 received a loan relative to construction of the hockey arena. That loan was forgiven at the front end to the extent of $17 million. There was $65 million total. And the loan at that time was continued. Now, those of us, many of us, the several of us who served, maybe not everybody, but I think a majority of the St. Paul senators at that time knew that the contract put together was going to be a very difficult contract for the city of St. Paul. And we said so at the time. And that the city, a city the size of St. Paul, would not have the ability to make those repayments. But the second thing I should bring to the attention of members, two things relative to what's in the bill in front of us. The first is that this forgiveness takes place 4 years out. It does not take place during the course of this difficult budget cycle, nor the next difficult budget cycle. It waits till the economy has rebounded and there's the ability to, at that time, not be as much of a problem with the state budget. But more importantly, we've done many, many of these local economic development proposals. I have been supportive of these proposals in the past. And I can go through the state of Minnesota geographically and talk about the proposals that have been approved by this state Senate. All of the state money for these proposals have been in the form of a grant, not a loan. There has been significant local support for most of these proposals. Some of them, that's not been the case. I think, for instance, if I'm not mistaken, I think last year's DEC proposal was entirely a state grant. But whatever's come from the state has been a grant. In most instances, there's been some kind of local match. Now, keep in mind, St. Paul had a very, very significant local match, which is not changed by the legislation in Senator Tomasoni's bill. But the fact that there was a loan done was unprecedented, had never been done before that I'm aware of. And all we're asking for in terms of St. Paul is equitable treatment on the part of the city of St. Paul. Equitable compared to every other city in the state that has received this kind of an economic development grant. That's why St. Paul is looking for loan forgiveness. That's why I oppose Senator Roebling's amendment. We're simply looking for fair and equitable treatment. Now, as I indicated, I would be happy and intend to, upon defeat of this amendment, offer my amendment to remove Sections 51 and 53 so that we are not proceeding in a more difficult time with additional bonding authority, but to simply provide equity in terms of one city in the state that would be treated the same as other cities in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I was not here at the time that Senator Cohen was talking about when this agreement was first made, but I find it very curious that he would make the argument that at the time the agreement was made, they all knew it was a bad deal, and they did it anyway. And the only reason I can think that they did that was under the expectation that some future legislature would bail them out of that bad deal. And I think this kind of thinking is emblematic of the very, very bad things that state government does and calls economic development. I think you can find a lot of criticism, a lot of fault to be made for this very structure in the first place, regardless of how we do it. But at this point, to come back and say, well, gee, we made an agreement, and now we have to pay the money back. We don't want to pay it back. And so we want the taxpayers of the state, taxpayers who live in my district and your district, to come and do that. Why is that a good deal? Why is that equity? That's not a good deal. That's not equity. I think if you want to make an argument to not do this thing altogether at all, I'd support that. Let's not do any more of it going forward. But I don't get the argument that, gee, we knew it was a bad deal back then, but I guess we were just hoping that later on people would know that and we'd come back and ask you to, you know, do it differently, have a redo, bail us out. I say no. Let's support Senator Roebling's amendment.
All right, Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, I want to respond to Senator Hand. And Senator Hand, as you've mentioned, you were not present in 1998 when we did this. So let me offer you the history. And this was reported. This is nothing secret. This was on the front page of newspapers. The then mayor of St. Paul executed a side deal with the hockey team. And what the side deal said was that the state of Minnesota, that if the state of Minnesota did not come through with the proposed proposal, that St. Paul would then be responsible for a total of two-thirds of the proposal. It was divided one-third the team, one-third the state, one-third the city. And I can tell you, as a senator at that time from the city of St. Paul, and I think this was true of some of the other senators, when we heard that that's what the then mayor of St. Paul proposed, we were surprised, shocked, and angered. Because what we said at that time, and what I said publicly at that time, was that there was no way the city of St. Paul could afford that. The agreement to make this a loan was done on the last night of the session. And I think Senator Langseth and Senator Berglund would confirm that. Without getting into the committee structure we had at that time, we were the three people involved in terms of the bonding bill. And we had no choice. Because if we had rejected that proposal, St. Paul was contractually on the hook then for something that would have been absolutely unsupportable. Absolutely unsupportable. So, Senator Hamm, when you suggest, well, I wasn't around at the time, and you accepted this proposal with alacrity, and this is what you wanted to do, and so on. No, that was not accepted by the senators from St. Paul. We had strong, strong reservations. I expressed those reservations publicly in the newspaper, on radio, I'm not sure about television. And on the last night of the session, we didn't have a choice because St. Paul was then going to face a huge financial calamity if we didn't go ahead with the loan that was shoved down our throat.
Senator Hamm.
Mr. President, and Senator Cohen, I appreciate your history, but I reject the notion that we don't have a choice. We certainly have a choice of how we're going to vote. I do think it's problematic for the state government to get in the business of building stadiums and hockey arenas and anything else we want to talk about. That's a problem. And if we want to choose to do that, and I guess we can find ways to do it, I personally don't think any of those things make a lot of sense. But I just would suggest to you that whatever the deal was, and whoever agreed to it knew what the terms of the deal were when it was agreed to, and they ought to be upheld. That's my point. And so live with it and pay your debt and let's go forward. But I would certainly agree with you. Let's not do it again.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, I was in the Majority Leader's office, I think it was the last night of the session, and we were trying to decide how to handle this situation. We came up with a deal that we did. But you know, with so many communities in this state, including many of the rural cities, there has been a 50-50 match. I remember even before that, Fergus Falls got a conference center. We gave them $1.5 million. Detroit Lakes got a facility. And last session, and Senator Hahn may have disagreed with this, but last session we did Duluth, we did Bemidji, we did Crookston, we did St. Cloud. And they got 50% of the money. If we go along with what Senator Cohen wants, they would be getting about 50% of the money. What is wrong with that? I've thought for some time that we should have forgiven this this loan. So I would urge you to vote against the amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, Senator Langseth and Senator Cohen, I want to respectfully disagree and suggest that this is not similar to Fergus and Bemidji and other communities. Those were truly public facilities. This one's public only so they don't pay property taxes on it. This one is, I know it's owned by the city of St. Paul, but if they want to use their own arena, they have to pay rent to a group called Minnesota Hockey Ventures, which owns the Wild. It was set up in such a way that if they use their own building, they get 10 days a year they can use their own building, and they got to pay the utilities and the janitorial costs and the costs of keeping it open for those days. But if they want to use it more than 10 days, they have to pay rent to the tenants, which is kind of backwards. So it's not similar in any way to those other projects, which were public purposes. Now, giving a grant to a city and to a team is something that you might want to do, but I think if so, you ought to compare it to Hennepin County, where the county is paying for it, not the state. And they may come to us in a few years and say the state should pick up the tab for the ballpark, but it was Hennepin County that made the deal, and what St. Paul is doing is the same thing. It was agreed to, and I agree, I disagreed with your mayor, what your mayor had done and what happened here, and I thought it was a terrible idea. But in this case, the public money, the first $65 million of our loan was forgiven, the first $17 million of that $65 million loan was forgiven that day. And if you look in the bill, the language we're changing, it was basically paying, it was a heavily end-weighted thing. There's no interest loan, not paid back until the end. So in effect, the taxpayers of the state were paying about a third of the rent, the cost of it. It wasn't really a loan. It was one-third of that at least has got to be paid by the taxpayers, because by the time they pay it 25 years down the road when the big payments come in, the money's worth that much less. So if you want to compare it to something, compare it to the Hennepin County baseball stadium deal. And in that case, again, I thought that was wrong to do, but that was a decision that the legislature in Hennepin County made. I just don't think we should be undoing these later. And if this is unsupportable for the city of St. Paul, and why do they want to take this money and use it to build a new facility that's going to be used as a practice arena for the Minnesota Hockey Ventures enterprise? Charge them rent for that. And maybe it can make up for the fact that they've been collecting the rent for everybody else who uses it in the last 10 years. I think that if the city can afford to, and they're planning to, whether you take out the Language Center Cohen or not, they're planning to put in this pond, which is a nice facility, but they ought to collect rent on that from the hockey team since they're paying the hockey team to use their own facility in the past. I just think this was an unfair deal at the beginning. I think it's still an unfair deal. If the city was hurting that much, they wouldn't have the money to put into this pond $40 million project if they, and that's why they want this, so they can fund that.
Okay, Senator Day.
Mr. President, and I was around here, and I did vote for it. And it was a deal. And they've made $8 million in payments. We forgave $17 million to start with. Who are we all here to sit and say, let's let them off the hook? For what reason? You could roller skate around You know, Mayor Coleman, back in 1998, you could roller skate around St. Paul and you wouldn't even hit anybody. Now it's a vibrant city. This has been absolutely wonderful for St. Paul. I love St. Paul. I think it's a great city. But I'm going to tell you what, this arena was what really kicked it off. But forgive people for all these different loans. What we got to do? We got to do Delta next? Northwest Airlines, we sure wouldn't do that. Since when do we just write off loans because people, and in the meantime, and Senator Marty just hit it, it isn't like it's a broke community because they're already talking about spending another $40 million. My goodness, I mean, I'm sure it'll happen, but that's beside the point. As I tell everybody, I paid my $100, so I get to say what I want here. Why did we build it? We built it because Thomasoni and people like that, we're talking jobs. We needed some jobs, too. And it employed a lot of people. And it's absolutely wonderful for St. Paul. It's wonderful for Minnesota. It's great to have people in my community drive in here from Owatonna and go to the hockey game. My son has season tickets. I go a couple times a year. It's just absolutely great. But not only for that, all of the entertainment, the acoustics and everything. It's a wonderful facility. But why write it off? If they want to raise some ticket prices to pay for it, go ahead. I don't think whoever they're having in there in any concert would mind a little if they need a little money to help them out. Have at it. So I'm just saying, I don't get this at all. And if you want to do some pond hockey, which is great, I'll help support that. But let's do it separate. Let's find out where we're gonna put it, what it's gonna cost. Put together some kind of deal. And then we can do it. But this whole bit about coming in here and saying, you know, we this is after the fact. A deal's a deal. A deal's a deal. And it was great for St. Paul. Please don't, you got to remember that. I'm telling you, when you're in Tommy Reed's and McGovern's and Cassetta's and you name it, come down there on any given night, this is what's really helped. And as I said, in 1998, before this was done, you could roller skate around down there, and you wouldn't run into anybody.
Okay, I think we know pretty much what this amendment does. So, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Day. I'm glad you love St. Paul so much. But all St. Paul's really asking for is some equity with other cities around the state and regional centers who have gotten state grants, not state loans. And that includes Crookston, Bemidji, Duluth, St. Cloud, Marshall, Fergus Falls, Minneapolis, Hutchinson, Fairmont, Rochester, and Detroit Lakes. For 11 years, we've been carrying the debt burden on this arena, and by putting it out into the future, we're not affecting our current budget situation. But I do think that there has been some concern about issuing bonds to build the pond or the event district. And I think that could be put on hold for now. So the St. Paul legislators will agree with Senator Roebling on half her amendment. And I'd like to propose that we divide the amendment between line 1.2 and 1.3. I want to make sure that that's clear. So we would support the second half of the amendment, which I'd like to take up first, which is to delete section 51 and 53, and that is the authority to issue the bonds. And I would like to ask the members, I'd like to say let's support that and think about that some more, about whether that's appropriate for St. Paul to do. But I'd like to ask the members to defeat the first part of the amendment, which is on 1.2, which is delete section 49, which is the loan forgiveness section. So, Mr. President, if we could take up the second amendment first and vote yes.
That's Senator Roebling's decision, Senator Pappas, which one to take up first. We will divide it, but...
Thank you, Mr. President.
No, it's not.
I will agree to the division. I don't have a problem with that. But the issue I am most concerned about is the loan forgiveness. And so I guess I would like to take that one up first, and I'd like a roll call vote.
Which one is that again that we would take up first?
The 1.2, which would delete Section 49. That would be deleting the loan forgiveness.
So we'll be voting on 1.2 first. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and members, undoubtedly almost every one of you at some time during this session has asked a budget chair or a tax chair if there was something they could do that you would like to have happen that cost money. And you were probably told, no, we don't have any money. And we don't have any money not only for this biennium, but we don't have any money for the next biennium. And now Senator Cohen is suggesting maybe we have some money in the biennium after that. Members, this is really poor, poor way to budget, having this provision in this bill. And I would like to suggest that if it stays in this bill, you all should get your amendments ready for 2014.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, let me just revisit what I suggested a few minutes ago procedurally. Senator Roebling indicated that she actually liked Sections 51 and 53 more so than 49, although that's part of her amendment. I would ask members, as Senator Pappas has, as Senator Langseth has, to vote no on this divided amendment, Section 49. If Senator Roebling decides to then withdraw her amendment, if the amendment's defeated, thereby keeping 51 and 53 in the bill, I will offer the amendment to take out Sections 51 and 53. That's my promise to the floor. But on this first part of the divided amendment, would ask you to vote no.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I support the deletion of all of those sections, so I won't withdraw my amendment. But the one thing I'm most concerned about is the loan forgiveness, which is the first thing on this amendment on line 1.2, section 49. So, members, I'm asking you to support that first and foremost, and then we can support the second one after that.
Okay, Secretary will take the roll on the divided amendment. It's 1.2 we're voting on. Secretary will take the roll on that. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. There being 26 ayes and 38 nays, the first part of the amendment does not prevail. Okay, now we're on 1.3, the second part. Well, now we're on the remainder of the amendment. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I still support the remainder of the amendment, but I do have a question for Senator Cohen. These two were tied together in that if we forgave the loan, then the city of St. Paul would supposedly have the money to pay off the debt for the bonds for this pond pot project. So now we would just be giving St. Paul the money. And they wouldn't even have a project that they would have to pay off. So what do you think they will be doing with this extra money that they'll be getting free from the state?
You know, Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Roebling, if St. Paul wishes to proceed, they'll have to determine a different avenue. My commitment to many members on the floor prior to session and then my commitment during the session was to support what's now left of your amendment. But my issue has always been that this debt was unsupportable for St. Paul. As to how they reworked the money, I can't speak to that. I'm not on the City Council. I'm not the mayor of St. Paul. But it was unsupportable. So I can't answer your question at this point.
Senator Day.
Well, Mr. President, he's the finance chair. He should be able to answer these questions. What all of this money is going through you and you're spending it? What do you mean you don't know? She just asked you a question. You say you don't know?
Senator Cohen, then we're going to vote. Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, Senator Day, let's see how I can phrase this. I'm chairman of the Minnesota State Senate Finance Committee. What I said is I don't know what St. Paul is going to do in the same way that I can't tell you how they spend every dollar of LGA money they get. I'm not responsible for their budget. With the amendment we now have in front of us, St. Paul will have to reconfigure things. I don't know how they're going to do that. That's what I don't know.
Mr. President and Senator Cohen, you're putting together this Santa Claus package for the city that you live in, and you're ahead of the finance committee in this state, and we've got a $4.5 billion deficit, and you have now convinced, I guess, a group of people that we don't even have a problem with dollars, and you're asking for something in a bill that's coming back. I mean, tell us a little bit about the pond hockey. Where are we going to build it? How much is it going to cost? At least tell us a little bit something. What you'd like done? All right, or if you don't know, I guess we just send the money there. I guess okay.
Secretary, take the roll on the amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Secretary will, the President will recognize Senator Koch.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And members, I don't have an amendment. I just, Senator Tomasoni, I'd like you to expand, and members, if you could direct your attention to the, it's the finance spreadsheet that we received, page 9, line 375. What that line is doing there, it's about, if you follow it across, it's about $10.2 million that is being transferred from the Workforce Development Fund into the general fund and then is spent in the bill. And this is something we should all be attentive to and concerned about. The Workforce Development Fund, as we heard from Deed and from the workforce centers, is quickly depleting. As you all know, unemployment ticked up another tenth of a point last month. We're at about 8.2 in the state. And quickly, these funds are being used. Now, there is some federal money that will be infused from the stimulus funds, but even so, we heard from Deed and the Workforce Centers that they see the depletion of this fund as imminent. And so, Senator Tomasoni, I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about those numbers, and then if you could just let us know, you did mention in committee that this money is being used for other programs. I'm wondering if you could expound on what those programs are. And also, I do notice this is an ongoing appropriation into 12 and 13, and if you could just explain that as well. Thank you.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, Senator Koch, thank you. The Workforce Development Fund had received around $20 million in federal stimulus money in the federal stimulus package. And as a result of that, we were able to use some of the Workforce Development Fund to transfer to the general fund and use it for some of the jobs creation programs that we have in the bill. For example, the Biobusiness Alliance might be one of them. And quite frankly, what we're trying to do with this workforce money that we've moved into the bill is to create jobs up front. There are several different programs on the spreadsheet. If you look down the list of programs on the spreadsheet, you'll see that we are actually funding job creation now so that people don't have to actually go into the workforce centers to look for new jobs because of the fact that they have found a job. And so hopefully what we're doing is we're stimulating the economy with the workforce money before we actually have to worry about people being laid off and whether or not they're getting unemployment benefits and whether or not they're going to be able to find a new job. And so that's the whole issue with using that workforce money now.
Further discussion on the bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate file 2081, a bill for an act relating to economic development and housing, establishing and modifying certain programs, providing for regulation of certain activities and practices, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Final passage. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes, 15 nays, bill. 49 ayes, 15 nays, bill is passed. It's still agreed to. Without objection, we'll revert to messages. Go ahead. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 978, a bill for an act relating to human services, changing the requirements for shaken baby syndrome training and licensed child care and child foster care programs. Senate file 978 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
All right, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur with the amendments by the House to Senate File 978, and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator Erickson Ropes, a brief description of the bill and what changes were made by the House.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a shaken baby syndrome training for licensed child care providers, and the language was just a small change identifying the age group that is being targeted here. The House came up with some better language. We were trying to get our get language that dealt with birth to age 5, and then there's a question about whether it included 5-year-olds. So we went with their language that had to do with up to school-aged children. We concur.
Okay, on the discussion. On the motion by Senator Erickson Robes to concur with the House, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 978, a bill for an act relating to human services, changing the requirements for shaken baby syndrome training, licensed child care and child foster care programs, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. We had 64 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Without objection, reports of committees.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate File Number 2099, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environment, natural resources, and energy, establishing fees, reports the same back with recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Pogemiller, you wish to adopt that committee report.
Mr. President, thank you. I would move that the committee report just read by the Secretary be now adopted.
All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Without objection, we go to sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills.
Senate file number 2099.
Second reading. That's all the work we have so up to now at the desk, Senator Pogemiller.
Okay, Mr. President, members, the plan, as best we know it right now, is that tax committees meet at 8:30 in the morning we're going to recess now. We have to wait for the Transportation Committee report from the Finance Committee. That'll be about a half hour, so we just need a skeleton crew to process that. Tomorrow, the Tax Committee is going to take up the transportation bill that's just coming out of Finance at 8:30 in the morning. They should be done with that within the hour, I would think. Then Senator Bach, later in the morning, I think about 10:30 or 11, is going to take up and hopefully process the tax bill in the tax committee. And then we would start session at 3 o'clock tomorrow. And we potentially could take up the transportation bill if it doesn't change in the tax committee. Perhaps you might be willing to do that or not. So that's just, it just depends whether people feel they're ready to take up the transportation bill tomorrow. So we would do some general orders, And then we would take up the environment funding bill on Thursday. And that would leave us then just, and the transportation bill, if we haven't done that yet, tomorrow, we'll do that on Thursday. And then that would leave us just the tax bill and the human service bill. And I would hope to process those as quickly as possible. So the transportation bill, I mean the health and human services bill, we know is struggling because of fiscal notes. And we're just hoping we can figure out a way to get that processed this week, if we can. I don't know if we can. So,
Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, are we on announcements of Senate?
We're on announcements, yes, of Senate.
The State Government Budget Division will meet in 1/2 hour in room 112. We will be processing a number of election-related bills. State Government Budget Division, 1/2 hour, room 112.
Under announcement, Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I refer you to 80 years and a billion seedlings. Today, DNR Commissioner Mark Holston planted Minnesota's 1 billionth tree seedling produced in state Minnesota State Nurseries at the 2 p.m. ceremony. The billionth tree seedling was planted and it highlights the DNR's 80-year commitment to sustainable management. Truly, reforestation is a big deal in Minnesota. Thanks.
Senator Prentner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee will meet immediately after session for three confirmation hearings.
Senator Ramo. Thank
you, Mr. President. The members of the Subcommittee on Clean Water will meet at 4:30 in room 107.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, the Health and Human Services Budget Division will meet at 6 p.m. in room 123.
Senator Higgins.
Public Safety Budget Division will meet tomorrow at 9 o'clock in room 112. We have two bills to kick out of there.
Senator Sangem.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, I think from the standpoint of the minority, and the transportation bill, I don't think there's any question. We'd probably like to see that on Thursday if we could. It's just the rush, and we're not going to have a chance to look at the bill. So I think preferably Thursday would, and just do the two of them on Thursday would be what we would recommend.
Okay. Any further announcements? We're going to wait. I think there's a committee report coming in. So,
okay, Mr. President, I'm going to call for recess. I do want to, members, there's a likelihood we're going to meet Saturday. So, oh, this is the Transportation Committee report? Oh, okay. Then I will hold for the desk to.
Without objection, we'll revert the reports of committees.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which is referred Senate File 1276, a bill for an act relating to transportation appropriations, appropriating money for transportation, Metropolitan Council, and public safety activities and programs. Reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended as follows. Delete everything after enacting clause and insert. And when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee report just read be adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now I think.
So with that, Mr. President, we will adjourn now then. We don't need to wait for anything. So.
Okay. On the.
That's correct. So, Mr. President, I would move the Senate adjourn till Wednesday, April 22nd. Wait one sec.
Mickey, you can have this one back. One step below me, you don't even know me.
Okay, Mr. President, my apology. I move the Senate adjourn till Wednesday, April 22nd, 3 p.m.
On the motion to adjourn to Wednesday, 3 p.m., all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.